Hi, folks. Elissa Walker-Campbell here to tell you about our good friends at Mercer Well Service, who pride themselves on integrity, leadership, and complete customer satisfaction in the oil and gas industry. They truly understand what it takes to be successful. In fact, they've been providing outstanding completion and workover rig services for over 50 years. One of the key components and reasons that they have been able to have such longevity is their exceptional staff and experienced personnel to assist you 24 hours, 7 days a week. Mercer Well Service also provides a full line of completion and workover rig services that include 158 rigs and have 25 swab units. Did you know that Mercer Well Service yard locations include Cleburne, Jacksboro, Kilgore, Whitesboro, and Sweetwater, Texas, among many others? And they are equipped with mud pumps, mud tanks, hydraulic catwalks, pipe racks, and rig supervisors. Why not give them a call today at 940-668-5147. Mercer Well Service. Call them at 940-668-5147.
The Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell just got bigger. Featuring former defensive star and three-time national champion at Nebraska and NFL player Jason Peter. Jason Peter under the helmet. With Jason Peter on the Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell.
We have covered a lot of ground this weekend on the Big E Sports Show, and as always, we save the best for last. Jason Peter, he needs no introduction. He's on our show every single week with our Under the Helmet segment, three-time national champion. And Jason, we always appreciate the time. Thanks for dropping by.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Jason, we got a lot to talk about, and I want to delve into the situation at LSU, the fact that Tyrann Mathieu, he was let go, permanently kicked off the team for rules violation. And of course, last year, you got to remember, you know, he was suspended for a game last season for a positive test of synthetic marijuana. I mean, do you think this was, you know, that coach should have given him another reprieve and a second chance, or was he just, you know, I'm fed up and to let him go?
Well, I know the initial reaction in Baton Rouge was kind of against Les Miles and the decision that he made to kick him off. But I think as the facts kind of came out, or as some of the information was kind of leaked and it started to spread around town, I think most people then understood that he had a strike against him. At least we know of one strike, at least, with the smoking of the synthetic marijuana last year, and was suspended, like you said, for a game. And I imagine that Les Miles said, look, if you want to stay with this football team, if you want to stay here at LSU, then you need to follow rules X, Y, and Z, and if you don't, then you're gone. And obviously he didn't follow through on everything, and it's a huge loss for LSU. It's a big loss for college football, I think, because when you talk about a game-changing or a game-changer, as far as a player, that's what the Honey Badger was. He was a guy who could change the momentum of any game. He's a guy that at any time where he had an opportunity to get his hands on the ball, it was an opportunity for LSU to take one back, whether a punt return or a fumble return or interception. But, I'm with Les Miles, I guess, on this. You can't have guys like that in the locker room. And from Les Miles' standpoint, you've got to make an example sometimes. If other players know that there are rules that are set for the team, but Les Miles won't enforce them, that's a sticky situation you can get yourself into. If you want to be a championship-type team, you need all guys on the same page, and that means following the rules, whether they're small rules or big rules. You kind of need everybody that's committed and dedicated to that one goal, and that's to win a national championship.
You're listening to Jason Peter. Of course, this interview is being powered by our friends at Mercer Well Service. And Jason, I think you're spot on. I mean, it is a loss for college football, certainly for the Tigers, but you really got to respect head coach Les Miles. I mean, he sends a strong message that they will not tolerate drug abuse. I guess I always just find it stunning as a player that you're willing to take that risk. You're willing to take that chance. I mean, your body's supposed to be your temple and you got to take care of it.
Yeah, it's, and I try to always bring it back to maybe when I was in school and how would we react, or would we be doing stuff like that? And certainly we had guys on our team that smoked marijuana, and they usually got caught and they got suspended, or they got kicked off the team, or they just ended up leaving, because those guys usually aren't the most motivated or the most successful, which is shocking, because when you think about the Honey Badger, I mean, this was a very successful player. I mean, he was in New York for the Heisman Trophy last year. Guys who smoke weed, usually it's not a drug that is makes you excited about going out and practicing for 2 hours every day. And to think that he's been as successful as he's been is kind of mind-boggling. But yeah, you know, just to, say again, you know, where I stand on that. I mean, I support Les Miles. I know he's kind of left the door open here. I think the Honey Badger probably went and visited McNeese State and maybe some of those other schools and walked out to their practice field that probably covered or a quarter of it has rocks on it and sand, and it's not the nice facilities that he's used to at LSU.
Right.
He probably saw the stands where maybe 15,000 people sit, and who knows if they even fill that on game day. And he probably said, man, what in the world did I do? You know, I can play in Baton Rouge in front of 90,000 people every Saturday that are screaming their head off, or I can transfer to an FBS school and play immediately. I mean, I think nowadays most of these kids, they pick schools based upon where they can play for a championship, but I think even more so, who can get me to the NFL the fastest, and where can I be kind of that higher draft pick? I think that's on the short checklist for these kids, and that's even more shocking for a kid that, you know, he's not the prototype of an NFL player, but he certainly is a guy who would get a chance to play at the next level. So for him to risk that sort of stuff is shocking.
Well, it's interesting because they are saying, as far as in regards to the future in the NFL, that he potentially could be a first-round pick. Do you agree with that?
No, I don't think he would be a first-rounder. I think, and this is the thing that sometimes is discouraging with the NFL process, is sometimes it's not just about the good football players. You see it all the time with whether it's a lineman maybe who's too short, or maybe he's not heavy enough, but on Saturdays in college football he can go out and just dominate, but it's not what the NFL necessarily is looking for. And when you talk about Matthew, he's I think 5'9", 175 pounds. So you're not talking about a big guy here, but he would definitely have gotten his opportunity. He'd probably get drafted in somewhere in the middle of the NFL draft. But either way, I think if he went down a level, I think he's screwed, kind of, because NFL teams will think, well, you know, that maybe the testing policies for drugs aren't as great, and is this something that's going to carry over into his life as an NFL player? Is he going to be more of a liability to us? Whereas now, he wants to stay at LSU for a year, maybe not be on the football team at all, and I think that would probably be the best decision. Whereas then if Les Miles let him come back and then play his senior year, at least there is an effort, or at least it looks like there's an effort for him to kind of change his ways and change his life And then maybe after his senior year, NFL teams aren't as concerned about what could be a drug issue as if he was trying to get to the NFL this next year.
Sir, it's been an eye-opening experience for him. Jason Peter with our Under the Helmet segment, and let's move forward. Let's talk about the Big Ten Conference. And first of all, I want to zero in. It's been a while since we've really talked about your Huskers, and I understand, I mean, the word is at a camp that there were a couple of guys, four-star players that transferred. I mean, what's going on?
Yeah, two offensive linemen. One from the Chicago area, Ryan Klatchko, and another kid from the Florida region, and his name's Tyler Moore. Both offensive linemen, both, like you said, four-star guys. Both Tyler Moore was the first true freshman to have started at Nebraska on the offensive line, which says a lot because the tradition at Nebraska on the offensive line runs deep. And this kid, he decided he was going to pack his bags and leave, and whether he was homesick or missing a girlfriend or maybe it was playing time, nobody really knows for sure. All we know is that he left school, and he's probably going to spend a year at a junior college and then transfer to one of three schools, if we've been told, and that's either Florida, Florida State, or his father said he could come back to Nebraska. Now, that was kind of funny, you know, hearing that, because I don't know if I've ever heard of a kid that transferred and then transferred back to that school. But his father also was a player here at Nebraska. His cousin or his uncle was a player here. So I don't know if he was just trying to sugarcoat it for Nebraska fans. So it maybe the relationship between that family and Nebraska would still be a decent relationship. But, yeah, they packed up and left. And, like I said, the kid from Chicago, who also had high hopes here, he was supposed to be kind of this tough guy, a brawler. And a lot of questions have now been raised about the offensive line coach back here, Barney Cotton, because there were some remarks made, some exiting remarks from the Tyler Moore camp, basically saying that Tyler really enjoyed his time under head coach Bo Pelini, really enjoyed his time under offensive coordinator Tim Beck, but there was no mention of Barney Cotton, the offensive line coach. So, you know, if you have a couple of players at one position that are transferring, a lot of questions start to be asked.
Of course, last year Nebraska finished 9-4. This is Bo Pelini's fifth year. How much, I mean, having a couple of, you know, key players transfer, I mean, how much does that affect your guys' stock?
It's a lot of people are concerned about the offensive line. It's been an issue since Bo's gotten here. There have been injuries on the offensive line, and now you lose two guys that were figuring in, Tyler Moore obviously being one that was competing for a starting job, to now where at the offensive tackle position, people are concerned. They basically have three guys there. And one of them has been, Quayle is his last name. He's been injured for the most part since he's been here. So you kind of got to ask, well, what's any different about his health now? Usually the guys that are injured from the time that they get here usually spend the rest of their college careers being injured. So Nebraska, I think, is thin at that offensive tackle position. They haven't been great there since Bo has been here. So it's a concern. A lot of people are wondering if we'll be able to get through without having to move a player from guard, or do you take a young defensive lineman and move him over to add some depth? Because besides the three guys that they have, I think you're talking about maybe some true freshmen that are there on the depth chart.
Well, they're going to have to find some answers pretty quick. The season gets underway September 1st at home against Southern Mississippi, and then you guys are on the road headed to UCLA. You like the layout of this year's schedule, Jason?
Yeah, they get Michigan at home, which will be a good game. They get Wisconsin at home. They have to travel to Columbus to play Urban Meyer. And I don't know if you've caught any of that all-access show on ESPN with Ohio State and Urban Meyer, but he looks rejuvenated. He seems like a coach that never even thought about retiring in the past 10 years. And, you know, he's going out, and I think the difference that you're going to see with Ohio State, I don't know if you'll see it necessarily this year, but I think in the next 2-3 years to come, is the difference between Ohio State and the rest of the schools in the Big Ten is going to be that front seven on defense. I think he's going out and he's getting the same type of kids that you see playing in the front seven in the SEC now playing in the Big Ten. And that's the difference, I think, in all of college football in the SEC, is the front seven that they have down in SEC country is just head and shoulders better than everybody else.
Okay, what about Wisconsin and Michigan State? As some folks saying these should be top 10 teams. What do you think?
Well, that's the way SI sees it. I don't necessarily see it that way. I don't know if there is a Big Ten team that should be in the top 10. Maybe Michigan, just from the momentum that they carried in from last year. They obviously have a big game to start the season off against Alabama. That'll be a good measuring stick, I think, to find out where they are. But Wisconsin has been a team that, offensively, they'll put out some points. Brett Bielema has done a very good job with that program, but more in particular with that offense. But defensively, you know, I think in order to be in the top 10, you got to have something on the defensive side of the ball, and they have yet to show that they're able to get it done on the defensive side. Now, Michigan State, on the other hand, probably known D'Antoni's teams have been better on the defensive side than the offensive side, but they lose their quarterback in Kirk Cousins, who was more than just a quarterback. He was that team leader. And, you know, they also, on the defensive side, they're kind of a real blitz-heavy type team, and there's the old slogan, you live by the blitz, you die by the blitz. You better be able to play some base defense in there as well. So a lot will come down to, I think, how well that defense can play without having to blitz, to bring guys and get pressure on the quarterback, because it's just a matter of time before you get burnt playing that aggressive.
Okay, Jason, got about 30 seconds. Who do you think will be the dark horse or perhaps that surprise team within the Big Ten Conference this year?
As far as nationally, the only school I really see as being dangerous would probably be Michigan, but just from within the conference, a Big Ten team that could Northwestern came in here and beat Nebraska last year. I don't know if they have the guns in order to do it again. I'm hoping that it will be Nebraska. A lot depends on Taylor Martinez and that offense and seeing if they can get the black shirts going again. But, probably a team from the middle of the pack. I would probably say Nebraska.
You heard it from the best, Jason Peter, with our weekly Under the Helmet segment. And, Jason, I hope your new gig is working out. As I understand, you're getting up at 4 o'clock every morning and driving to Omaha. How's that working out for you?
I am. Unfortunately, I go to bed before my kids do now, so that's the one downside of it.
Sarah probably loves that, doesn't she?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Listen, we'll catch up with you next week. Thanks, Jason. Good stuff.
All right, thanks, E.
We're going to step aside, much more straight ahead here in just a minute.